This is a Defocus Media production.
This is Dr. Maria Sampalas, and welcome to Corporate Optometry Nation podcast, where we interview eye care professionals in corporate optometry and take a different approach to a business aspects of optometry. Hey, Corporate Optometry Nation, this is Dr. Maria Sampalas. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Ken Coppolo. He's an optometrist in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I had the pleasure of meeting him at Vision Expo East. And he's got a great story, and I've never been so impressed with business aspects of optometry as Dr. Coppolo. And Ken, thanks for joining the podcast today.
Thanks for inviting me, Maria.
Can you give us like a background of what school you went to, where you're from?
Yes, sure. I grew up here in Las Vegas, Nevada, went to college. After college, went to Southern College of Optometry in Memphis, Tennessee, graduated in 1990, and practiced in Las Vegas since 1993.
So you have currently 14 practices within a corporate setting. Can you tell us what brand you're with and why you chose those brands?
Yes, we currently operate 7 LensCrafters subleases in Las Vegas and Reno, and 6 Pearle Vision franchises in Las Vegas. And we are in the process of opening up a 14th, a 7th Pearle Vision location in Las Vegas.
Very nice. The Pearle Visions, are those franchises? Are they sublease?
Those are franchises. The Pearle Visions are franchises. We're considered to be a licensed operator.
Very nice. Do you have a partner? Is this on your own?
I do have a partner. I've had the same partner since about 2006.
So when an optometrist wants to expand besides 1 or 2 subleases, when do you think is the, what do they look at to be able to expand to really scale the business? Is it a partner? Is it, you know, making sure you have the right staff? What do you think is the trick?
I think the trick is vision and balance. I think it's important to be a good partner with your corporate partner. I think it's important to understand that even though there is a separation, a legal separation between your practice and their retail business, I think it's important that you demonstrate that you're concerned about the benefit of their business and that you want to ensure that they're going to be successful. And at the same time, I think it's fair to expect that they're going to be invested so that you're successful also. So in the true definition of a symbiotic relationship, I believe that's really the basis of the key of expansion. And then I think it's important that you have the vision to understand the benefits of scaling and not to dilute your level of care, your level of customer service in favor of scaling it, but that you balance scaling with keeping your level of care and services high.
Now, in your practices, are you practicing medical model to the highest standard of care in Las Vegas?
Yes, we are. We are a full primary eye care, full scope primary eye care practice, where all of our doctors are TPA certified, and we operate and practice with insurance, you know, to the fullest extent of our medical abilities.
Can you let our doctors know in the group what technology you have in your practice and how that's worked to build your business and clinically and financially?
Sure. So every one of our locations has a high definition OptiMap unit, whether it's a Daytona or the P200C. We of our 14 locations, 10 of them have OCTs. And we also engage in MPOD testing, where we use the Quantify unit from ZiaVision to help determine risk for macular degeneration. We have threshold visual fields testing in all of our locations. We provide services like pachymetry and gonioscopy and contrast sensitivity testing and things like that. So I think the key for being successful in practicing in a medical model is to understand that most of our patients come into our office seeking glasses or eye exams, and it's our job to determine what medical risks they have, what risks they have for ocular medical conditions, and then identifying them, making sure that you're credentialed with the right insurance companies, and then making sure that you're utilizing the care, the equipment that you've invested in order to make proper diagnostics and proper management decisions.
I know you guys are very busy. I think you told me in the past you see like 11,000 patients a month between all your practices. That's a lot of patients. But do you also reach out to other doctors in the community to let them know about this technology to make it like a referral center to utilize these technologies?
Yes, we have a community outreach program, which includes, you know, events to the public, but it also includes healthcare screenings. We do partner with primary physicians, and we go to their offices. We're doing diabetic retinopathy screenings, all kinds of other vision screenings, and we make ourselves known as a gatekeeper, a primary eye care provider to all of the community of healthcare providers.
Is that your job as the owner, and you're with your partner to kind of work on the business, not working in the business? Those are things that you'll do on a weekly basis, monthly basis, is kind of going out and networking with other physicians?
We've evolved into that, yes. Of course, both my partner and I spent many, many years seeing patients and every single day. And as the demands of the business have started to increase, we're more into in the community, and we're interfacing with strategic partners. We're interfacing with insurance companies more directly, working on ways to save them money and ways to increase accessibility to our services.
Can you give us any marketing tips that you use in that area besides just working with insurance companies other physicians? Is there specialty marketing strategies that you use?
We try to leverage all the electronic support that we can, whether it's through a CRM program, newsletter, a digital newsletter. We try to make sure that we gather not just their name and their email address, but we understand who the patient is, what their needs might be, and then we try to speak to them. We also do a lot of strategic partnerships within our community. So that means we're out in the field performing vision screenings, detailed vision screenings, which actually provide value to the populations that we're screening. And we're doing thousands of those a year.
You know, Las Vegas is a great area for many tourists to visit. Do you target the tourists as well as like a walk-in service or something at the Lens Crafters or the Pearl?
We do, but not necessarily as a marketing, not from a marketing standpoint. We happen to be in areas with our name recognition of Lens Crafters and Pearl Vision. We have a lot of name recognition, so they kind of find us.
Does your Lens Crafters have one-hour labs, or has that been taken away?
They were taken away last
year. In your Pearl, do you have a lab, or?
Yeah, we have finishing labs in each of our local Pearl Vision locations.
Do you think that that's a competing factor against other eye care offices in the area?
We definitely do. We think it's, you know, a good opportunity to take to do the most that we can to make sure that the patients receive high level of care, but also high level of customer service. So we try to invest in our business and make sure that we provide the best service we can.
Can you give us an idea of what a difference between a LensCrafters sublease and a franchise differences? There's a lot of providers out there that might consider either model. Can you give us like the pros, the cons? What are things that doctors need to look into?
Yep. I think the LensCrafters subleases, you know, are really better suited for doctors who want to see a lot of patients, who want to not necessarily have to run a lot of moving parts with regards to the business. LensCrafters draws a lot of patients through the practice, and so therefore you don't have to worry so much about marketing your practice, not nearly as much. You don't have to worry about things like inventory control, frame purchasing, things like that. So it really well suited for a doctor who wants to really excel in seeing a lot of patients and providing high levels of medical care, as well as high numbers of vision exams. And then, of course, you can focus on contact lenses in most of the LensCrafters sublease arrangements because they allow you to sell the contact lenses.
What percentage of your practice is contact lens sales at your LensCrafters? Do you know?
About 30%.
I think that's average a little above average in the industry. That's pretty good ballpark for doctors to aim for.
Yeah, I agree. And then our Pearl Vision franchise locations, it's really a different type of an animal. It's a full scope business. So you're concerned about not just seeing those same patients, but you have to make sure that you have frames to sell and lens products to sell, and that you have a real strong understanding of the retail environment. So lens treatments, lens styling, different types of progressive lenses that are available, digital technology versus non-digital technology. More concerned about material, polycarbonate, high index materials, things like that. And so, and of course, there's a lot more people to manage. So therefore, the Pearl Vision is a much larger, broader business endeavor.
Does Luxottica help the doctor taking over a Pearl or looking into a Pearl franchise with a certain number of frames, where to put the frames on the boards, pricing? Do you have deep discounts through Luxottica? I mean, I know they have a lot of different brands under their licensing.
Yeah. So certainly there's onboarding support. No question about it. There's training. There's a lot of digital support on their internal website, training platform. There's field support. So you have people that are available to you that come in and make sure that the location is set up properly and that the location is maintained properly. Deep discounting, no. No, I don't think that ProVision franchisees enjoy any particular deeper discount than any other provider of the same, you know, same size.
Is there an initial investment that a doctor would need to look into when taking over a franchise?
Yeah. So there's a couple different, you know, thought processes there. You could be taking over an existing corporate location. You have to, you know, pay your franchise fee, and then there'll have to be a, you know, an asset purchase, which is, you know, the equipment and the inventory. And then of course there's a component of goodwill, which is negotiated between the parties. And then of course you usually buy the inventory separate when you take over an existing corporate Pearl Vision center.
Have you bought a Pearl Vision before?
Yes. We bought four of them and we've opened up two.
Very nice. You know, I'm going to put you on the spot, Doc. There has been a large debate about there being no goodwill in these practices. And I think there is. What is your opinion on it?
I certainly hope to think that there is goodwill. I think that Pearl Visions are, in effect, a neighborhood eye care facility. And I do believe that the goodwill of the doctor and the goodwill of the staff is valuable. So I would have to say, yes, I do believe there's a significant goodwill factor in the Pearl Vision franchise.
Very good. When you went into these practices, did you purchase them from another doctor? Was it a turnaround from corporate? How did you purchase these Pearl Visions?
The four that we purchased were from the corporation. They were corporate conversions.
And that's their model now, to do all Pearl Visions as franchise? Is that the way the model's going?
No, I'm not necessarily privileged to that information. I'm sure if they decided they would want to enter into a market with more corporate locations, that they would do that. I'm not aware of anything, but I don't know. I don't have any firsthand information. So, but they do operate a number of corporate Pearl Visions still that have not converted. Whether they haven't converted because no one wants to purchase them or because they're not for sale, I don't know the answer.
So when you purchased these practices, were the doctors that were working there going to stay on board as employees? I think that's a big asset to be able to keep all these practices that you have going.
So in our cases, none of the doctors stayed. I think part of the problem was the doctors that were there were kind of part of the problem, and they were not all that performing all that well. And I think it was perceived that the doctors were part of the problem and not part of the solution. So mm-hmm. When you're a doctor and when you're an OD and you're purchasing a location, you're not as much at the mercy of the existing doctor as you might be if you were an optician and you had to bring in another doctor.
So you bought these practices and you have, let's say, 14 right now. How do you staff all these? How do you keep people happy and to want to stay on board, opticians, frame stylists, ODs? You need a license to keep these places open.
Well, we don't need licensed opticians in our state because we are optometric license supersedes opticians licenses. So that makes mm-hmm. the license optician issue not a factor. It's important to have a mindset. You know, our philosophy in our business is where we really try to coach on the belief system, and our belief systems kind of help with our behaviors, and our behaviors kind of give us the results that we desire. And that's kind of in contrast to kind of a dictatorship where we simply are, you know, walking around telling everyone what to do. We try to really emphasize the whys, and I think that helps with team buy-in and alignment. So we want to make sure that fundamentally we're all aligned in the services and the care that we're delivering. Whether you're a staff member, an optometric technician, optometrist, or whatever, you need to be aligned from a philosophical standpoint. I think it's really important that you start there. And then, of course, you need to understand what it is that your staff wants. And we have learned that certain staff members, you know, like to be rewarded differently than others. So some people, it's really about the money. Others, it's about recognition. Others, it's about, you know, positive feedback. So we try to make sure that we understand that our staff understands that we're in it for the long term. We're our primary goal is to take care of our patients. We have a very, very strong concern for them as a person, for them as a parent, for them as a family member. So we try not to demand, we try to be very, very respectful of their time. We try to make it a place to come to work that they enjoy coming to and they don't dread it. And then, of course, we want to make sure that they're financially compensated and that the intangible financial compensation of insurance benefits, we want to make sure because insurance, for example, is a big problem for a lot of people. So we just build it into our system that we're going to try to take care of our staff. And we're going to make sure that we can offer them, paid time off and insurance benefits. And we're not going to nickel and dime them. If it's a little bit slow, we're just going to start sending people home. Obviously, we're going to manage our business, but we're going to show the respect to the patient, to our staff members, so that they're not felt like they're just a number and that all we care about is some bottom line. And it works.
No, I think those are great. That's a great advice for a lot of entrepreneurs out there that want to take on more than one sublease. The doctors are only good as their staff. If the staff isn't happy, they're not going to treat the customer happy and the patient's not going to come back. And your business doesn't ultimately grow. So I think that's a great mindset to have. And if your staff is happy, your business will grow. I think it's very important and not nickel and diming them. I think even doctors, if they get sent home early and they're supposed to be there, they have obligations with student loans and a family. I think that's important. And then the doctors start looking for other positions.
So true. And it just eventually comes back to bite you and it backfires.
So how many doctors do you currently employ?
About 23 currently. We're in the process of trying to hire a couple more. Our staff could really handle 26 doctors and we have about 23 right now.
How do you recruit these doctors? Do you go to the optometry schools? Do you just post on the local Optometric Association? How do you recruit these doctors?
All of those things. We work with some of the recruiting agencies that specialize in eye care positions. We do run ads at virtually every optometry school. We run an ad with the NOA. We run ads with the NOA Nevada Optometric Association, as well as the AOA national website. So it's a lot of word of mouth recruitment, as well as placing ads wherever we can. We have been to a few optometry schools and done some of their senior capstone events or their job fair events. And those are always a lot of fun.
If you treat your optometrist right, they're going to refer their friends. So I think that's important.
And we've had that situation occur. And we have some of our doctors are married to each other. Some of our doctors graduated all together in the same class. So it's really nice that we have a group of people who work together in a semi-work family environment, and a lot of them have recruited other doctors for us.
I want to talk about the optical business for the Pearle Vision. I think it's important for doctors to learn doctor-driven dispensing, even if they don't directly benefit from the optical, like a LensCrafters, Target, Walmart, because I think it's important if they do make those recommendations to the patient. The patient will stay in that office, and they'll come back for the eye exam. If they take their script somewhere else, they're most likely to get an exam somewhere else. What is your perception on doctor-driven dispensing?
I completely agree with you. One of our core philosophies in our practice is to uncover patients' needs, and that's distinctly different than selling to people. So uncovering patients' needs is our job as optometrists. It's our obligation to our patients. And so that means determining what their needs are for hardware, for spectacles, for different types of spectacles, if it's contact lenses, if it's daily wear disposable, or whatever the case may be. So again, it goes down to the beliefs. And if you're doing your job as an optometrist, you will uncover your patient's needs and they will benefit from that in the dispensary. And it does 100% improve retention.
I know they're two different animals, the Pearle and the LensCrafters, but I want to ask about patient retention. Is one a little higher than the other? Are they about the same? You're using the TAB appointment book, right?
We use TAB for specific purposes. So no, we generally book through our own, our appointment schedule is managed through our own software program. So we use TAB to help maintain recalls. But our retention is about the same between our Pearle Visions and our LensCrafters.
At your Pearle Vision, what do you feel is the capture rate for in your optical?
It varies location to location, but if you were to translate it into a capture rate, I would say it's around 75%.
That's great. Do you feel like that's the optical staff, the doctor, a combination of things?
100% combination of things, but it really starts with the doctor uncovering needs.
Doc, I want to know, how many offices did you start with? Did you start with one? Did you start with three? How did you get to be with LensCrafters?
Started with one location. Yeah, started with one location, one LensCrafter sublease in 1993. Showed interest in expanding, so I was kind of awarded a few more LensCrafter subleases by 1996 or 97. And then I kind of went backwards a little bit and ended up with only two locations for a short time until around 2004. And we had a massive expansion in our market where IMED actually acquired a large body of patient lives, which triggered them to open up two new LensCrafters in Las Vegas. And we kind of inherited about 250,000 lives all at once. So by that time, I had partnered with my current partner, and we had our fourth, fifth, and sixth locations opened, and we decided to consolidate into a call center, to a centralized appointment scheduling and billing department and things like that. So that's how we had acquired the first up to eight Pearle LensCrafters locations, and then shortly after that, in 2010, we acquired two Pearle Visions through the corporation, through corporate conversions. Then two and a half years later, we acquired the last two Pearle Vision locations. And then within the last 2 years, we have opened up two Pearle Vision locations.
I mean, you're not slowing down anytime soon, so.
Nope.
I mean,
the demand is there. I think it's important to note that the demand for our services is huge.
It is. Yeah. I think you got a great positive outlook on optometry. Well, there was saying that the income's not there or the practice isn't there. I mean, you've shown some great growth and scaling it as well and really taking the bull by the horns. I want to go back to your call center. Is that at a specific location? Did you rent out space in another area? How did you centralize all those things?
Yep. We're currently renting out space in an office building separate from all of our other locations, and it's housing our call center, which is an appointment scheduling center, our billing department, our marketing department, which we use for our community outreach marketing, as well as other ancillary services.
How many calls do you get through that call center a day?
More than 500.
Do you have multilingual people or?
Definitely, it's an advantage to have. To have bilingual people in our call center for sure.
And is your office there? Like, is that the office that you go to kind of work on your business?
Not necessarily. We have conferences there. We have a lot of meetings there. So anytime we're meeting with any of our team members, doctors, or support staff, we like to meet there. But I generally work, wherever I am.
Would you do like weekly store visits to check up on like the pulse of the office?
Yeah, we absolutely visit the locations frequently. Interact with our managers frequently, see patients periodically and sporadically, but we're looking at the business every single day, by way of analysis of numbers and interaction with our staff and our managers every day.
When you do store visits, are they by appointment or you just show up?
Either way, both. Sometimes it's by appointment, and sometimes we just show up.
How do you target older patients, like at nursing homes? Do you have like a service that takes them to your office?
No, we do not. We don't have anything like that. We go out into the community, some nursing homes and some senior centers, and do screenings. We also have some of our doctors, which will periodically do lunch, like talks on senior citizen eye care issues like cataracts and glaucoma and macular degeneration. So we do interface that way.
How do you get into those areas? A lot of doctors try to get into either nursing homes or even schools to do screenings or talks, and it seems like it's hard to get in. Can you give us some advice?
It can be really hard. Yeah, it can be really hard. When you get to a point where you have the scale to do so, we've hired a full-time individual who takes care of all of that networking, and he does a phenomenal job for us. So he's just one of the seasoned, great communicator who has the ability, you know, to not take no necessarily for an answer, and really, really demonstrates the value of the services that we bring. And when you demonstrate the value of the services that you're going to provide or that you're offering, the doors open.
Yeah, I think as a young optometrist, you know, wanting to get a job at your office with the high technology, the technology that you have, the well-being of the employee, wanting them to, you know, have a work-life balance, I think it's a great asset to work for your company. What do you look for in an employee OD?
That's okay. So what we really look for is, first of all, philosophical alignment. They have to have an understanding of, you know, patient first. We have to have an understanding of, you know, contact lens types of philosophies. We have to have just a general understanding that we're aligned with result, you know, with regards to the priorities of our business. And then, of course, we look for self-starters. We look for individuals who demonstrate leadership ability, who demonstrate, you know, a careful attention to detail, who are willing to train and who are willing to, you know, come to meetings occasionally and participate in those meetings, who can provide flexibility to help, you know, cover whenever if someone is ill or something like that, where we need to have, you know, help with flexibility. So that's the one that we look at as well. And just, of course, you know, high skills, high quality optometric skills. It's kind of a non-negotiable. It kind of goes without saying, but the soft skills of the ability to let a patient feel, to have a patient feel that they're, you know, very important to our doctor.
As we have young ODs listening to this podcast, what questions do you ask during an interview?
One of the questions that we always seem to ask, or I like to ask, is what motivates you? What motivates you? What is important to you? And then the idea is to elicit something like, all I care about is, you know, getting Sundays off, or I just, you know, I need to make enough money to cover my student loans. You know, I don't want to work in a location that's, you know, more than 5 miles from my house. Or whatever that case is. So we definitely ask what motivates them. We definitely discuss their understanding of our patient care model and that they're aligned with our patient care model. For example, we don't necessarily fit every patient with a daily disposable just because it's a daily disposable. And we've been practicing for many, many years, and we've determined that, you know, every patient is different. And so let's fit the patient in what the patient is best suited for, as opposed to just blanket one brand or blindly just going to one brand or one modality. So those are the kinds of things that we're looking for when it comes to alignment.
What makes you, I mean, obviously you've had a great relationship with Luxottica to be able to attain so many different locations. Can you give doctors some advice on how you've aligned your practice to their optical to be able to approach them to say, look, I think I'm the best doctor for this location. Maybe I should have more than one location. Can you give some doctors some advice on that?
Yes, it goes back to really recognizing that this is a mutually beneficial relationship and that their success really depends upon your success and vice versa. Demand respect, make sure that you understand, that you make them understand that you're an independent doctor, but that you're willing to work hard to ensure their success by way of your own success.
I think you're a visionary for optometry, the way you expanded the business and really taken a great situation and made it a great momentum for practice. I want your insights on what you think optometry will be like in the next 20 years, what you think about disruptive technology and all these new concepts that are coming out.
Well, thanks, Maria. I think that optometry is definitely changing, and I think healthcare in general is changing. I think it's important that optometrists don't ignore the fact that these changes are coming and rather embrace them and try to be, let's be on the, my philosophy is that I'd like to be on the front part of this wave, as opposed to being on the tail end of the wave and having it, you know, kind of consume us before, you know, after it's too late. So one of the things that I'm pretty passionate about is that optometrists go and embrace the roots of optometry. I think the roots of optometry lie in functional vision. I think we can find differentiation of our profession when it comes to, you know, managing patients with binocular vision function problems, especially in the eyes, especially in the wake of all this digital technology and demands on our on the our vision systems and our children's vision systems. And then I think it's important that we look at things like macular function, color vision function. These are the things that will differentiate us that are not going to allow the commoditization of our profession. And I think that's where we can find a lot of stability. And I think that combined with, you know, a passionate model for delivering high level medical care, and then mix in your refractive and your contact lens care. Now I think we have a fully differentiated profession, which has, you know, insulation against some of the stuff that's coming in that's designed to take it away from us, commoditize us, or to lower the bar on the level of care and services that we provide.
Are you involved with the American Optometric Association to kind of inhibit some of those things in your state?
I'm not particularly active. I've been a member of the AOA for about 25 years, and I support, you know, I don't always align completely with the AOA. I don't think any of us always fully align with any one particular committee or group. But, you know, I'm not actively fighting these things to come because I really don't believe that I think they're going to come whether we fight them or not. And I think I've taken the approach of is that I'd rather embrace them and be part of it and help form them in favor of optometry and in favor of our patient care than try to fight it.
Yeah, they are coming. So I think if doctors kind of don't hide in their offices, ignore it, just be there and say, look, if this is going to come, these are the guidelines that we want. I mean, we're eye care professionals. We're experts in the field. We need to make those guidelines, not someone else.
That's exactly right. And I want to be the doctor. I don't want to be the doctor who's sitting there saying, you know, I don't think you should go online for this, or I don't think you should do that. I want to be the doctor that says, if that's the way you want to do it, I think you should do it, but you should do it from, you know, get your services and materials from me, because I am the best at providing those levels, you know, those things, and you trust me and you know me, and it's really no need to go, you know, to someone else that you don't know. We're providing it, whether you want to walk into our brick and mortar or you want to, you know, get, you know, access our care another way.
Doc, is your location all 7 days a week?
Not usually, no. Our lens crafters are open 7 days a week, and about four of our pearls are open 7 days a week, and a couple of them are not. In a perfect world, we'd like to be open 7 days a week, but you know, sometimes business doesn't support it, and sometimes a doctor coverage becomes a little bit more challenging. So, but in a perfect world, I think 7 day a week coverage would be nice.
Now, besides all these practices that you run, you're also a board member for SNAP. Can you give us some insight on that?
Sure. SNAP is the Society of Nationally Associated Pearl Professionals. It was a group conceived and formed by Dr. Lisa Hamilton, an optometrist in Littleton, Colorado. It's a group that's designed to help promote the well-being, the financial and business well-being of Pearl Vision licensed operators. We have a couple annual meetings, and those meetings are really designed to help promote education, both clinical education as well as financial and business education, and also a really, really good platform for idea and information sharing amongst the attendees. And it's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of camaraderie too when you go to the meetings and you meet everyone, right? Instead of just talking on the phone or seeing a name on an email.
A lot of fun, and it's very productive. So almost there's not a meeting that goes by that I don't walk out saying, wow, you know, a conversation I had with a colleague resulted in some great idea. So the camaraderie is very, 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 very cool.
So even yourself, you're learning stuff out there, even though you really have the business understood.
I think, yes, there's so much out there to learn that I learn things all the time.
I think that's why you've been so successful. You have that mindset that you continue to learn and is always something to improve on. I think that's for any optometrist out there, having that mindset to learn and continue to improve, it'll just be success for the future.
Yeah, I agree.
So I want to thank you today for listening to the podcast, Corporate Optometry Nation, with Dr. Ken Coppolo. Ken, can you give us your information if doctors want to email you? Because I think you got a lot of great business advice.
Sure. My email address is kkopolow@yahoo.com. Feel free to contact me anytime.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Maria. It has been a pleasure.